is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
From the People's Social Forum in Ottawa, this is a Rabble Radio special.
No more, 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 no more.
Thousands of people converged on Ottawa today. They're here to create a better world and a better Canada. Through workshops, demonstrations, and assemblies, we're learning from each other. Or, as one bewildered tourist on the street said to another, I think they're here to say we shouldn't wreck Mother Earth just for the sake of money. That's certainly part of it. I'm Victoria Fenner. Every day until Sunday, I'll bring you the sounds and voices of the forum so you can be here with us in spirit, even if you can't be here in person. There's a lot on the agenda, and there will be lots in days to come. Here's a sample of what you missed in today's program.
Bishashig Anishinaabe Aki. Ndorinkwe Ndishnakas Namedododem. My name is Anna Collins. I'm the Indigenous Coordinator for the People's Social Forum, and I would like to welcome all of you to unceded Algonquin territory. Bienvenue à tout le monde, à la territoire des Algonquins. Je m'appelle Anna Collins, je suis la coordinatrice autochtone pour le forum. I'm going to speak in English. I just want to start today with some good words that have been given to me by my elders while I do this work to prepare for the forum. It is so amazing to see all of you here, to have felt the excitement and the enthusiasm from everyone who has come from a long way away to participate. And for the Indigenous peoples of this land, it means a great deal to see a very strong willingness to work together in the spirit and intent of the original treaties moving forward into the future. I see so many faces that are new to me, and I hope that I have a chance to meet with some of you and build those relationships. I probably won't. I'm running around like a chicken all the time. But I hope that all of you build relationships together and maintain those relationships and work forward together in a new way based on this good understanding of what it means to live side by side together on this land with good intentions and according to our protocols and teachings. You are most welcome here. We allowed you to come here in the first place, and we need to remember that when we work together, okay? Miigwech, I hope you have a really, really wonderful, wonderful forum, and again, I'm so excited to see all of you.
Keynote speaker for the day was Naomi Klein, one of the foremost thinkers and authors of our time on issues of social justice. Here's an excerpt from her speech.
First, let me just say what an honor it is to be introduced by Gabrielle, who is such a hero of mine, who revived the fight in Quebec and this country, so inspired so many of us. The honor is truly mine. I also want to acknowledge that we're here on unceded Algonquin territory and thank Anna Collins for that wonderful welcome. Thank Roger Rashi and all of the organizers of this extraordinary gathering for all the work you have been doing for many, many years and months. This is going to happen. You know, before this is over, all the papers will go flying. So, welcome, bonjour tout le monde. Je vais parler en anglais, je m'excuse, but I also, first of all, want to thank the translators who I know will do a wonderful job. I've been thinking about precedents for this moment and the last time we have had a large-scale grassroots convergence of so many different social movements, so many different streams coming together in our country. And I don't think there is a direct analogy for what we're seeing here and what we will see here over the next few days. But I've been thinking about Quebec City in April 2001, really as the last time I remember. I think there are some veterans of that moment here. A time when our different sectors came together against a common enemy and to advance a shared agenda. That's when Canada's social movements helped lead a continent-wide mobilization to stop the proposed free trade area of the Americas. And we didn't just come together, we came together and we won. The FTAA died, never to be revived. And it is a testament of the power of these kinds of convergences. But a few months later, in the anti-activist chill post-9/11, that movement died. Not our individual movements. They, for the most part, remained intact. Some of them expanded. But that coming together broke apart. That movement of movements, as we called it at the time. And many of us went back, some of us fearfully, into our respective silos. Now, that breakup happened for many reasons. That's part of what I explored in my last book, In the Shock Doctrine, about how moments of crisis, of shock, make us lose our story, our narrative. And in large part, that book was driven by that experience of being part of a movement that was kind of shocked out of existence before its time. The reason I think it's worth looking back is not out of some nostalgia, because that movement was far from perfect, and I think already this convergence is getting things right that we didn't get right. I think that the leadership of First Nations people that has been, and the respect that has been a huge part of organizing this summit and the success of this convergence is something we didn't do as well in 2001. But I think one thing that we did do right back then is that we weren't talking about the personalities of individual politicians or the marginal differences between political parties. We weren't spending too much time talking about that at all or our respective electoral strategies. What we were really talking about was the economic system that underlied all of that, underneath it all. And that was not just free trade, it wasn't globalization as it was often called. We were talking about capitalism. And that's what we were talking about when September 11th changed the conversation. And it's taken too long, I think, for us to come together once again, but it is happening and it is significant. And we must acknowledge the importance of that. So what is it that's bringing us together? I think it's a lot of different factors. In 2000, 2001, we were coming together because our various issues were being knit together by the ambition of these free trade deals, right? They were reaching into all of our lives, whether we were educators or healthcare workers, indigenous people, immigrants, everybody was affected by the ambition of this architecture. I used to say that we should thank the World Trade Organization because they built our coalitions for us with their sheer ambition. And one of the things that's been happening over particularly the past 5 years is that we find ourselves in the midst of an extraction frenzy in this country, particularly around fossil fuels, but not exclusively around fossil fuels. And we see this obviously with the tar sands, with fracking. We see it in large-scale mining projects, mining disasters, although as my friend Harsha Walia pointed out recently, mining is a disaster, certainly at that scale. We see it in that metal monster of pipelines stretching towards us in all directions, Northern Gateway, Kinder Morgan, Energy East, Line 9. And just as the virtual tentacles of those trade deals brought us together before, now the very real tentacles of this extraction infrastructure is bringing us together, this infrastructure of death, bringing us together to defend life and building new coalitions to do that. And once again, I think we have to be clear. Ultimately, this is not about stopping individual pipelines or an individual mine. It's not even about stopping the tar sands. It's about the logic fueling all of it. The logic that sacrifices life on the altar of money. This is the same logic that our social movements who are focused on fighting poverty, fighting for housing rights, for healthcare rights, for education rights, are also fighting that fundamental battle between life, profit, life, and money. A system that would sacrifice the lives of certain people because they're deemed less valuable. This is the logic at play in the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women. It's the logic that we see at play right now in Ferguson with the sacrificing of young African American lives. And I think it is the same logic that treats certain people as fundamentally disposable that is at the heart of the extractive economy, that declares certain areas to be acceptable sacrifice zones in the name of turning Canada into an energy superpower. It's a supremacist logic. It's a supremacist logic that divides the world relentlessly into somebody's and nobody's, into somewheres and nowheres, or worst of all, the middle of nowheres. This is a logic that founded this country we called Canada. It is embedded so deeply in the logic of colonialism, which was always based on the myth of nobodies and nowheres and sacrifice zones. And it is this logic, I believe, fundamentally that we must name and that we must build a movement to counter. Because we are living in a historic time where what we do in the next 10 years determines the fates for generations to come. Because we're not just living in a moment where it's only a river, a mountain, a watershed, a culture, a species being sacrificed in the name of economic growth. It's all this and more. It's the stability of all of Earth's systems that support life.
Naomi Klein. If you want to hear her entire speech, you can find it on the Rabble website. I'll also be posting it on Needs No Introduction, fresh ideas from speakers of note in weeks to come.
In order to be able to get everybody to the rallying point and then so that we could start the march, the bus organizers have asked me to propose this to you. When you line up against that wall at the end of this little square here.
And eventually the gathering moved on to Parliament Hill. There are concerts, music in pubs, informal conversation groups, and all kinds of things happening all over Ottawa tonight. And we at Rabble had a party of our own. Here's Meg Borthwick of Rabble introducing Linda McQuaig.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, I'm Meg.
Hey there. Now, I come from a community radio background, so if I don't have something written in front of me, I can't talk. But here it goes. Welcome to the year of Living Consciously. This is the 6th annual Best of Ravel book launch. My name is Meg Borthwick. I'm a freelance writer and activist, and I moderate Ravel's discussion forum, Babbel. I also have the great privilege of being included in this year's Best of. So I've worked in alt media for about 25 years, and pretty early on in my career, I was working at a community radio station in Toronto, and one of my fellow spoken word producers said, you know, you have to read this book. And the book was The Wealthy Banker's Wife, written by somebody named Linda McQuaig. Whoops. So, well, I don't really have to read this. I was floored by it. I was amazed by how lucidly and rationally and compellingly Linda completely undermined the fallacious arguments around ending universality in social programs. And that, for me, like, I wasn't really a nonfiction reader, but it was really eye-opening. But Linda's, of course, written a lot of other stuff. And by the way, Octopus Books is open until 7 o'clock, selling some of Linda's books.
Trouble with Billionaires.
Excellent. But one of my favorites, and maybe one of the best known, or most notorious, depending on where you are in the political spectrum, Shooting the Hippo. That for me was a really great book. So Linda also writes articles and columns for like a really diverse group of media organizations, like the Toronto Star, the National Post, and Rabble.ca. It doesn't get more mixed up than that. So please join me in welcoming the woman who haunts Conrad Black's nightmares, Linda McQuaig.
Well, thank you, Meg, and thank you for that very warm welcome. It does feel great to be here at the People's Social Forum and at the Ravel event. I mean, don't you feel you get such a sense of empowerment just seeing us all come together like this? And it strikes me that the struggle that we all have is to maintain that sense of empowerment in the face of obviously the worst government this country has ever seen. And I just thought of one little trick I've learned. In fact, I think I learned it the day that I can barely say this, that Harper got his majority. I remember waking up the next morning and barely being able to get out of bed. I felt so disgusted and disempowered. And I remember around that time there was a movie out, I don't know if you remember, called The King's Speech. Great little movie about George VI, I think it was, and how he had this problem speaking. And he was so kind of unable to actually, you know, speak when he really had to give these key addresses because he was so kind of tight inside and had all these bottled up emotions. And, you know, then he finally found a speech instructor who figured out that the trick was to get him to let all those emotions out. And of course, there's that wonderful scene in Buckingham Palace where the speech instructor has finally got him to just let it all come out. And there he is saying, "Shit, fuck, shit, fuck, shit, fuck, shit, fuck." And then miraculously, he can speak. And he gives this great radio address. So, I kind of figured out that worked. And whenever I feel depressed about the Harper majority, I just go, "Shit, fuck, shit, fuck, shit, fuck, shit, fuck." So I strongly recommend that. Yeah. course, here to celebrate independent media. What a great thing to be celebrating, celebrate Rabble. And I guess I just thought I would very quickly, because I'm not going to talk for very long, I just quickly talk about, remind ourselves about, you know, the vital role that media plays in democracy, which, you know, is easy to forget in the era of, you know, media triviality, celebrity culture, all that. You know, media, let's face it, is just essential if we're going to have any kind of meaningful democracy. And its essential role is not to document the celebrity lives of the people in power, but to hold those people in power to account. The wonderful quote I remember, George Orwell, I think I've got it right, it goes something like, journalism is writing something that will anger the powerful. And he said, anything else is just public relations. And I actually think that's really true. And, you know, sadly, when we look around, our mainstream media, by that standard, is just public relations. Just to give you one quick example, of course, we know that of the corporate media, but it's so true even of our public broadcaster, damn it, that we pay for. I don't know if any of you heard last Saturday, the House on CBC Radio, supposedly one of the serious programs, Chris Hall was doing the hosting, and he actually had on John Baird and Joe Oliver, two of the most powerful and the most awful ministers in the Harper government, which is the most awful government ever. There he had them. And he let them just run on at the mouth. They each had their own interview, and they just walked all over him. They just said whatever they wanted, and he didn't ask one tough question. And then they, you know, they were doing something on the robocall decision, and instead of doing a substantive item on it, they decided to toss it over to the journalist to chat about it. And all they did was, they didn't talk about the issue, they didn't talk about the question of how are we going to get to the bottom now that the judge has clarified that, you know, there was more than one person involved here. Instead, they just chit-chatted what would be the impact on the voting in Quebec. So dreadful. Let me just quickly say that, you know, having trashed CBC like that, I want to quickly actually say something good about them for a change. I was also astonished last week or a couple of days ago to turn on Power and Politics and see them talking about the Lac-Mégantic report, the Transport Safety Board, very tough report. And Evan Solomon had on the parliamentary secretary for the Harper government. They couldn't get the transport minister. And he was just sort of slipping and sliding all the way, you know, away from it, just not answering questions, just saying how much they were sorry about the families, feeling bad and everything. And he just kept coming back to it. He said, yeah, but in the report, they're blaming you. You know, and he just kept hammering them, and eventually the secretary said, well, I haven't actually read the report yet. And Solomon just kind of stopped in his tracks, and he just said, sorry, you haven't read the report yet? I've read the report, and I'm just a dumb guy asking questions. He just really got under the guy's skin. He made him angry. The guy ended up saying, you're just practicing gotcha journalism. Right on. Right on. Anyway, apart from that rare moment that was so striking to me, I couldn't actually walk away from the TV. I was so shocked. Sadly, what we see from our media generally is so appalling in terms of holding the powerful to account. And I just want to maybe just illustrate in terms of an area that I've written a lot about, and that is inequality, you know, the tremendous transfer of wealth and power from ordinary Canadians to those at the very top. And, you know, you would think, I mean, that it's actually one of the most significant developments of the last 30 years. It's fundamentally changed this country in very striking ways. So you might think anybody, you might think the media would think this is an important subject and that this is something they should deal with, right? In fact, the media's response, of course, largely has been to ignore this tremendously huge development until Occupy Wall Street came along and they felt obliged to at least report on it, at least till the tents were taken away. But more than ignoring, what they also do is they rationalize, they provide justifications so that, in fact, what is clearly an outrageous thing, this transfer of wealth and income from redistribution to the top, you know, Robin Hood in reverse, so that it's justified. It's justified in terms of, you know, the arguments about we have to have smaller government, we need tax cuts to be competitive, da-da-da-da-da, right? We get that from the media all the time. So we end up with a situation, you know, 30 years ago, the top CEOs in Canada had an income roughly 25 times the average worker. And by the way, that's a big difference, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the baseline case. That's a lot of inequality. Today we have inequality that's not, it's got the top guy's not 25 times the average worker, but 250 times the average worker. Huge increase in inequality. And in some areas, like the financial sector, it's even more extreme. You've probably heard about that case, about that guy John Paulson, the Wall Street hedge fund manager, who made in 1 year $3.7 billion. He made it betting against the subprime mortgage market and in the process helped trigger, you know, the financial collapse and the recession that we're still all suffering from. Anyway, that guy, $3.7 billion, that income, it was not 25 times the average worker or 250 times the average worker, but actually 82,000 times the average worker. So in other words, that guy made the same roughly in 1 year as, let's say, 82,000 nurses. I mean, in what moral universe is that guy worth the same as 82,000 nurses? I mean, in what moral universe is that guy worth the same as one nurse? It just sort of strikes me that the normal human response to that kind of situation would be outrage, except that the media kind of covers it over, kind of explains it away as some sort of natural sounding phenomena, something we have to do. I would argue that without all those media justifications, what we'd really be left with is public rage along the lines of the group of people that marched down Wall Street right after the 2008 crash carrying a placard that read, "Jump, you fuckers!" Anyway, that clearly is why we need an independent media. So the wonderful thing about what I see in Rabble is that I know that Joe Oliver and John Baird would never submit to an interview with a Rabble person because they'd be afraid of being beaten up in a way by the person asking very tough questions that would make them very angry. So in conclusion, let me just say that there's a quote I love by Mark Twain. He said, "People who don't read newspapers are uninformed. People who do read newspapers are misinformed." And I guess I would just add, people who read independent media are informed And they're all so angry, which is exactly what they should be taking.
Well, what a day it was. A whole mixed bag. We heard a lot about problems, but tempered with the spirit of optimism that will carry us through the next few days as we look at some hard questions, but also some great ideas about how to live a life creatively and with a sense of power for the benefit of all of us. I'm Victoria Fenner from the People's Social Forum in Ottawa. Good night. Talk to you tomorrow.